Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 15th of September 2014, the podcast that cheats at solitaire. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again this week are Dave Turcotte and Jonathan Lochey. Guys, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back.
Good to be here.
We also have a special guest with us today, Dave and John's co-host of the Superplex Brothers podcast, Matthew Page. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So first of all, why don't you tell us what the Superplex Brothers podcast is?
Okay, I guess I'll take over from here. The Superplex Brothers podcast is the podcast for video games and professional wrestling. We go over the shows, we go over the news in both video games and pro wrestling, and every now and then we have first impressions or reviews, and that's pretty much the gist. You know, you can expect some shenanigans between the three of us, and it's generally a good time.
Usually we just complain about how terrible Monday Night Raw is.
He's not wrong.
No, he's not. But, yeah, it's generally a good time. You can check us out at superplexbrothers.com, or you can check out our Facebook, and we're also on Twitter as well.
Okay, so this is a special edition of the podcast. We're going to be discussing a big scandal in gaming journalism known as Gamergate, or hashtag Gamergate. And so I got the guys from Superplex Brothers on here to tell us about what that is and why even those of us who aren't gamers, why that's important to us. So what's going on with that?
Okay, so this is a lot of things, but the overall theme is there is a lot of corruption, basically, within gaming journalism. And one incident that basically was the catalyst for all this was about a developer named Zoe Quinn, who tried to release a game called Depression Quest onto Steam's Greenlight service, which is basically like a voting service to get games approved for distribution on Steam. And what ended up happening was a lot of people did not want the game approved because, let's be honest, not too many people want to play a game about going through depression.
Yeah.
And the game got approved anyway. And what it turned out happened was Zoe Quinn herself had connections to people who were on the board to vote for the game. And that's how it got through. Of course, most notably, she did have romantic relationships with five other men while in a relationship with another guy. And one of those people was a part of this board. The other four people were either other game developers or other game journalists, including people who write for sites like Kotaku.
And let's be clear about this. The problem isn't that she slept with all these men. The problem isn't that she cheated on her boyfriend or husband or whoever that was. The problem is she slept with journalists and game developers and got special favors for it.
Exactly.
I thought that was the sort of thing the feminists were against.
You would think so, but no, apparently not. Apparently it's just a, you know, a witch hunt. And yes, to be clear, her relationship issues are her own deal. That's her own moral dilemma to go through. That's her own thing. The problem here is her connections that she's created with the industry and basically getting these special favors. And that's a bunch of crap, quite honestly. And gamers were fed up with this. And let's be honest here. This has been a problem before where gaming companies have had connections with journalists. There was the huge issue over Kane and Lynch, which was a game that many people considered to be terrible, but one of the writers from GameSpot...
Let me talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, this was in 2007. Jeff Gerstmann, who was the lead editor-in-chief of GameSpot and at the time, and he reviewed a game called Call of Duty: Kane and Lynch. Kane and Lynch was an absolutely terrible game. I think it has a Metacritic rating somewhere in the 30s.
Yeah, it's low. It's really low. A lot of people don't even like to consider that it ever came out in the first place.
Yeah. But, long story, if you ever go to any gaming website, the first thing you're probably going to notice, there's wall-to-wall ads for different games. And at the time that Kane and Lynch was released, the publisher had given GameSpot a whole bunch of money to just plaster the site with ads. And the publisher wasn't very happy with Gerstmann essentially eviscerating the game on his review. And it didn't come out for a long time until about 2 years ago. Gerstmann did an interview where he pretty much confirmed that, yeah, he was fired because the publishers leaned on GameSpot's parent company that they weren't happy and that they would pull all future advertising revenue.
Yeah.
To me, this has been the issue with gaming journalism from the get-go, is that besides a couple of sites, ironically Giant Bomb, which was founded by Gerstmann after he was fired, and a few others, most gaming journalist sites are essentially a branch of the PR firms of major game developers.
So is there a problem with, like, the reviews and everything, whether they give it a good review or a bad review depends on whether or not they're acting as an advertisement for the game company, that kind of thing?
Yeah, that happens a lot. IGN is notorious for that.
Call of Duty.
Yeah, and sometimes you even have situations where, like, when Metal Gear Solid 4 came out, the creator of the game was basically like, okay, when you review this game, don't use the fact that there's so many cutscenes and so many long cutscenes as a means to detract the score from the game. When you have game developers basically saying, okay, this part of the game, don't count it when it's part of your score, and developers oblige to it, or reviewers oblige to it, that's a problem.
Yeah, I'm working on a story for next week's podcast over Yelp doing something similar to that, so this isn't just gaming, this is everywhere, you have to be careful.
And the Zoe Quinn stuff ended up becoming the straw that broke the camel's back, because basically what happened was, about a couple years ago, there became a surge in independent developers releasing a lot of games, and essentially indie gaming became kind of its own genre in a sort that a lot of people felt was kind of secluded from the mainstream AAA titles, and everybody was like, oh, you don't have to really worry about this with independent gaming. There's a lot more integrity there. Well, it turned out that wasn't the case, and a lot of people got really angry over this, and we started seeing videos from guys like Internet Aristocrat, who I will stand by and say, if I believed in God, that man is doing God's work.
I saw a few of those. They're really good.
But when this became as big as it was, people tried to come out and say, oh, this is just a witch hunt against Zoe Quinn. This is just a bunch of woman-hating straight white males who just want to have their cool kids club and don't want women involved in gaming. But that's not even remotely true. If you look at what happened to the Fine Young Capitalists, they had a great idea going. They said, if you are a woman, or even a transgendered woman, then pitch us an idea. If you don't have the means to make games yourself, pitch us an idea, and if people vote for it, we'll make the game for you. And not only would they get 8% of the profits, they could decide what the rest of the money could go to towards any charity they wanted. And they could still keep the rights to their game. To me, that sounds like a win-win-win-win situation.
Yeah, they don't actually have to do any of the work. And my understanding of that from what I read on it was that if they decided they didn't like, you know, the way those guys were marketing or whatever, they could take it and do it on their own or sell it to another game developer or whatever.
Yeah. And Zoe Quinn caught wind of this. And like the piece of crap that she is, essentially, started an attack campaign against it, which led to people being doxxed, which led to the website being put into 404, all kinds of stupid nonsense. And that only helped people think that Zoe Quinn was just awful, and nobody wanted her around. But of course, people turned this into, it's just because she's a woman. It couldn't be because, you know, she did everything in her power to ruin a perfectly good opportunity for women. No, it had to be because she was a woman, even though men have also been harassed and everything, too.
And it didn't help that this wasn't the only thing that made people hate Zoe Quinn. For months, she was claiming that, you know, she was being abused on a forum called Wizard Chan. And this was actually kind of before Gamergate really happened, but she was saying how, you know, all these guys, because it was, it's a weird Chan board that their biggest rule is no girls allowed. And she was claiming that these people were harassing her, they were hacking into her and sending her death threats. Now, once Gamergate broke out, people actually looked into this, and it was discovered that out of the entire board, maybe three people mentioned Zoe Quinn. So, once again, it looked like Zoe Quinn was doing this kind of thing to get attention.
And it looks like a lot of them, Zoe Quinn and Anita Sarkeesian, too, love to play the death threat card. I'm sorry, no. If you're on the internet and you have an opinion on anything, you get death threats.
Oh, yeah. That is truer than true. And what kills me is then you had other people in the gaming industry come out and, like, defend Zoe Quinn as well as other journalists, including somebody named Anthony Birch, who was one of the writers in for Gearbox for a game called Borderlands 2. And he was he, hilariously enough, outed himself for his own corrupt activity by admitting that he was friends with the people of Destructoid who reviewed his game. And instead of saying, yeah, this is something that's been going on and this is bad, he goes, well, nobody came after me because I'm not a woman, even though nobody knew about it prior to him actually saying it. And hilariously enough, he ended up getting a lot of feedback from that, which caused him to, of course, delete the tweets.
Which, and ironically enough as well, Sega is currently suing Gearbox for mishandling any and all marketing for a game that they made called Aliens Colonial Marine. So the fact that you have a guy flat out saying that for a game that Gearbox made internally, they used internal connections to get good reviews, and they let Aliens Colonial Marine sail off into the wind, not the smartest idea.
Yeah, definitely not. Another thing that's really been a prominent part of Gamergate is the response from the journalists themselves. Like, for example, Eric Kane of Forbes actually going out of his way to say that the gamer is dead, and as a culture, you know, we should move on.
It wasn't even just him. Over 10 websites within a 48-hour period had articles go up talking about how the gamer identity was dead and that people should be ashamed to call themselves a gamer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at one of these links you gave me to Forbes.com talking about this. And I mean, it's just quotes like, it quotes Lee Alexander, gamer isn't just a dated demographic label that most people increasingly prefer not to use. Gamers are over. That's why they're so mad. Games culture is a petri dish of people who know so little about how human social interaction and professional life works that they can concoct online wars about social justice or game journalism ethics straight-faced and cause genuine human consequences because of video games. So gamers are just losers who don't have a job or a girlfriend and they live in their mother's basement and, you know, etc.
And that's why you make your money off of us. Not the best strategy if you want to keep making money. And here's the thing. You want to know how we know that gamers aren't dead? Because gamers of all different races, creeds, genders, backgrounds got together and told people like Eric Kane that, no, we're not going to let you do this to us. That's why hashtag not your shield ended up coming about, because these social justice warriors ended up trying to talk for everybody, and these people were like, no, you're not going to do that to us.
Mm-hmm. And that created a hashtag called not your shield, which is also going hand in hand with Gamergate.
Yeah.
Well, and I also noticed further down the article, he plays the whole, well, we're not talking about all gamers card. Now, you know, substitute gamer with blacks or Jews or whatever and see how that reads.
Yeah. So gamers are dead, but not all gamers. Just the ones that agree with what we like.
I'm going to forego doing the normal LastPass promo this week because there's a much better deal out there. The truth is, I don't really get any money from that for the podcast. I offer it because I want people to use LastPass and protect themselves online. Now, LastPass has partnered with AppSumo to give new LastPass users a free year of LastPass Premium. So a whole year of premium customer support. A whole year of using it on mobile devices. So if you haven't signed up yet, go ahead and do it. Just use the link in the show notes. Nothing to do with Pegosity. Don't worry about us. Get your free year and secure your passwords. And remember that for most purposes, the free version works quite well. But I think once you try the premium features, you'll find that $12 a year is well worth it. It's just a buck a month. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. It sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers. At home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. I keep my PGP private key in my Bitcoin wallet in my LastPass blob. You can back up sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. You just need LastPass Premium to use it on mobile devices and other applications and to get priority customer support. So go get that free year of LastPass Premium using that special link in the show notes and log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember.
And these social justice warriors are such hypocrites. Now, they were complaining about Zoe Quinn and Anita Sarkeesian getting all these horrible death threats, but a 10-year-old boy on Twitter disagreed with Anita Sarkeesian on something, and all her followers got together and not only doxed this boy, but sent him all kinds of death and rape threats. Okay, and then when one of those harassers was called out on it, they basically said, oh, this is different when it happens to Anita Sarkeesian.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me, though, because, I'm sorry, from what I can tell, the feminists started this. It kind of reminds me of when the U.S. goes over to the Middle East and just starts waging war, shooting people, toppling governments, and bombing hospitals and villages and killing women and children, and then have the audacity to be indignant when they strike back in a terrorist attack.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. And these people have no dignity. They have no shame at all. Just completely and utterly worthless. But to drive the point home that this is not just about Zoe Quinn, there was a guy named Phil Fish who most people don't like because he's just one of the biggest jerks in gaming, essentially. And while I don't necessarily agree with what happened, he ended up getting doxxed. And a lot of stuff was revealed. And one of the things that was revealed, there is basically an award for indie games. He won, I think he won it twice, or he won it once, but he won it, and here's the problem. The judges that gave him this award were some of the people who invested into his company when he made his game, and they got paid when the game came out.
That's not a conflict of interest at all.
Yeah, there is a huge problem with conflict of interest, whether it's romantically or whether it's financially. And all these journalists and developers who are either blatantly paying Zoe Quinn in her Patreon account, like Maya Kramer, like Patricia Hernandez of Kotaku, and all these other ones, or whether it's romantically, like the Five Guys, it's all a huge problem in gaming right now, and everyone is up in arms about it, and it's just, you know what, it's one of those things that I don't think is going to go away for a while, and it shouldn't. I really don't think it should. Until these so-called journalists come out and say, listen, okay, we admit we were wrong, and we will try to better ourselves and work on our ethics. Actually, whether you believe them or not, Escapist Magazine actually attempted to apologize and say that they're working on their ethics policy. Whereas Kotaku continued berating gamers or making stuff up about how, you know, they care about this stuff, but then it turned out that the head editor, Steve Totillo, didn't want to cover corruption in gaming before, back in 2012, when he was like, oh no, that requires actual reporting, and I just don't feel this story is big enough to do that. So they're all a bunch of con artists and scumbags, and either turn their act around or go under. I don't care which.
Yeah, there's this one story you sent us about, I guess this is a gaming company, Fez, and they won all these awards, but apparently the judges were investors in Fez.
Yes, that's exactly what I just talked about. Fez was the game that won the award.
Ah, okay.
And the company was Polytron. But, yeah, he won these indie gaming awards, but it turned out that the judges who were on the panel were mostly people who invested and made money off of this game.
So definite conflict of interest.
Phil Fish has said a lot of really terrible things about gamers before this. Basically, when anyone said anything to him, he canceled his Fez 2 over criticism, and since Gamergate's happened, he's just attacked the gaming community as well, in addition to everyone else, and he has tried to convince people not to ever enter the industry, that they should give up on their dreams and find something else that they want to do with their lives. Like, that's not the kind of person that people are going to really get behind. And this whole thing where it was revealed that, you know, the guys who gave him the award were invested in it definitely did not help his case in the eyes of the gaming community.
Oh, absolutely not. And what's funny is now this is starting to pick up on websites that normally don't cover games, like Salon, which, get the shields up.
Yep. One of our favorite websites here on this podcast.
It's time to block some idiocy. But they were basically like, yeah, this is just white males who hate women. Which, funny enough, if they did a little more research, they would know that actually adult women are the majority of gamers.
Yeah.
So yeah, you might want to tweak your stance a little bit. You know, just something you might want to do. But no, of course not. They want to push their narrative, and that's what all these sites do, really. They just want to push their narrative.
So this Salon article is talking about Sarkeesian, so why don't we kind of back up a little bit and you tell us who she is and what she's all about.
Okay, Anita Sarkeesian. A couple years ago, she started a Kickstarter saying that she would do a series of videos on tropes versus women in gaming. She ended up getting something like, what, over $100,000 or something like that?
Like $170,000, I think, all total.
Yeah, almost $200,000, basically. And since then, she's made about 4 or 5 videos. I've lost count, but it really wasn't that much. And the quality of those videos weren't very good either.
Well, it's not so much that the quality wasn't good. There's just not much to them. It's basically her in front of a green screen and clips of games. And I'm a professional videographer. I do this for a living, such as it is. I would be embarrassed to charge a client any more than $500 for doing one of those videos.
Yeah, it was rough.
I'd probably do it for like $200 or $300. You know, it's just,
it was pretty rough.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening was a lot of the stuff that she would talk about in her videos was just flat out wrong, and she would show her complete ignorance of gaming. So basically, she's making these videos to talk about how women are oppressed, the patriarchy, everything you've heard before.
Yeah, and Tim Dyson, our co-host on his Lore T Hawkeye channel, did a couple of examinations of that and really just showed how she was kind of cherry-picking. She was looking at the women who were all, you know, voluptuous and dressed skimpily and things, and completely ignoring all the other women, even in those very same games, who were slim and covered up, things like that.
Oh, yeah. Not only that, but other things have surfaced, too, like videos of her in front of a classroom openly admitting to not liking video games.
Before she did all this, and now she claims to be a gamer.
Yeah, and then she has a collection of games now, which I'm sure she bought with some of that money that she got from Kickstarter.
How many games could you buy with $170,000?
A lot.
A lot. if you're talking just modern games,
at your average $60 retail price, $2,833.
Wow. So that's not where her budget is going, safe to say.
Yeah, well, at least not all of it. But it turned out that she ended up lying about being a gamer. And of course, gamers are getting angry about this because you're not even a part of our culture, and yet you're talking like we're all evil and, you know, we hate women even though that includes women as well. And it's just, it's another person trying to push an agenda in a market that they want to just get a hold in. And that's the thing. That's what this all boils down to. These are people trying to push an agenda on people who don't want one.
Yeah. And actually, Thunderfoot's had a number of videos about her, and I've criticized Thunderfoot many times, but I tell you, when he's on his game, he is good, and he, I think, has done a really good job at exposing a lot of her lies and duplicity. And I think it was one of his videos where he pointed out there was one time where she was talking about this game where supposedly you kill these prostitutes and then drag them around a while and then throw them in a crate for no reason whatsoever. And she talks about how, you know, you're encouraged to do this. You can't help but do this. When all of the Let's Play videos show what you're supposed to do in that game, which is sneak past them so they don't sound the alarm.
Yeah.
So apparently she had to get that game herself and drag those prostitutes' dead bodies around herself to be able to get that footage, because no one else had it.
There are a lot of parallels in between what brought on Gamergate and the backlash in the atheist community over the whole atheism plus BS.
Yeah, it's not the same people per se, but it's the same mentality. It's the same exact mentality. And I've also made the connection that Anita Sarkeesian is the modern day Jack Thompson. Just replace video game violence with video game sexism, and it's pretty much the same thing. The only difference is, I will actually give Jack Thompson credit. He at least was honest.
Yeah. He was honest about the lies he was telling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Jack Thompson. He was a lawyer who brought up this whole issue of violence in video games. And I don't think we ever did Jack Thompson on the podcast, but we did that one woman, I forget who she was, who was saying like, oh, when you play games, your brain creates dopamine, and that means it's addictive, you know, that crap.
Yeah, your brain creates a sense of enjoyment. That's bad.
Yeah, anything you enjoy, your brain creates dopamine. That's what it is.
As long as there is fun, there will always be someone to try and ruin it.
Yeah.
Think of the children.
The children, think of them, please.
Please, the children. But seriously, though, all of these people are just, I don't want to use the word scum here, because I think I've used it enough.
Schmucks?
Fine, for you. Schmucks.
Okay.
But seriously, though, just leave gamers alone. All we want is news on the games and reviews on the games. That's all we want. Gamers are tired of being told, you are scum. You are an oppressor. You who have no control over how you are born are somehow responsible for the plight of others.
Yeah.
That's a bunch of crap.
Just because you sat in your living room and played a video game.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's where you get into stuff like in this Salon column where it says, quote, when faced with Sarkeesian's critique, a loud and angry subset of gamers chose not to put out well-reasoned responses showing where they agreed or disagreed with her, but react in the same manner you might expect of a crowd of tea partiers, eager to defend themselves against what they view as an attack on their way of life. You know what? Maybe that's true, but I think he's ignoring an even bigger subset of gamers who did put out well-reasoned responses showing why they disagreed with her.
Yeah. Let's take, for example, a female YouTuber, Lucajin. She actually appeared on another podcast and was talking about how Anita Sarkeesian is just completely full of crap and just, again, showed off how little she knows about gaming.
Yeah.
And Anita was like, oh, there's no good female heroes. Pardon my language, but bullshit.
There's plenty of them, and they've been going. We've had prominent female main characters since the NES era in Metroid.
Yeah. We've had Samus of Metroid. We've had Lara Croft. We've had, hell, even Princess Peach got her own game.
Which Sarkeesian complained about, too.
Yeah. And Zelda, you have all of the female fighters in fighting games. Yes, you do have some that are dressed skimpily, but you also have some that are dressed more conservatively. And you have all of these different games with different female characters, and yet, oh, those are ignored, because that doesn't go with the narrative. Or you nitpick some random little detail that you don't like and try to say, this is the general rule.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even when this guy does that, hang on, who wrote this article? Let me scroll up. Zaid Jilani. I don't know how you pronounce that. But even in the examples he pulled out of apparently the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tweets that are about this, the ones he was able to pull out as his best representative samples weren't even that. Just saying, like, she brought it on herself. You know, she went and taunted the internet. One says she was essentially the Westboro Church of the internet. You paint a target on your head and dare people to shoot it, someone's gonna. Victim, please, she's gonna milk this for all it's worth. She's got to keep herself in the spotlight by any means possible. And I mean, it's just like, where are these are supposedly the horrible attacking tweets.
And something else I'd also like to point out, too, because I know Dave just mentioned Laura Croft as a prominent main character. Lots of people like to use her as an example of sexism in games. But if you look at Laura Croft, I mean, it's a reason why they usually pick the picture of her design from the first game on the PS1. Because if you look at her character design, her character modeling over the years, it's actually, it's much more of a conservative dress and appearance that they give her in pretty much every other iteration going forward.
I know in the movie they couldn't decide what size her boobs should be.
Yeah.
They were mood boobs they changed with her. I don't know.
You compare Lara Croft in Tomb Raider for the PS1 to Lara Croft in last year's Tomb Raider reboot, and they almost look completely different. If it wasn't for the same actual outfit and the hairstyle, you probably could have sold that as a completely different game. But they don't want to mention that. They just want to look at the actual pyramid-looking boobs from the PS1 era and say, look how sexist this is.
Yeah. Which I have to wonder how much of that was due to people being sexist and how much of it was due to the limitation in the number of polygons they could do back then.
Probably that. But there's another thing these people are forgetting. What about the games where you make your own character? And yes, they do offer you to make female characters as well. Those don't count, I guess? Because you're allowed to pick a man?
Well, and it's just like going back to the thing about dragging around the dead prostitutes. You know, Sarkeesian was trying to make it out as if the programmers specifically wrote this in so you could do that, when no, that's just the physics engine, and you can do whatever you want as long as the laws of physics in the game allow you to do it.
The fallacy that they are using is basically, just because you can do something doesn't mean that's what they promoted.
Well, and in this sequence, the part she didn't point out was that while she was doing that, her score was going down, 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 down.
Yeah. Let's take, for example, a game I've been playing recently, Skyrim. Yeah, I could go into a town and set everyone on fire. That doesn't mean that, you know, they promote that. In fact, I'm punished for that.
Yeah.
Because I lose out on so many things.
Well, because when I saw that about Sarkeesian and I saw Thunderfoot refuting it, I thought, well, you know, let me just go out and see on my own if there are any other playthroughs of that game where they do that. And it turns out there are a few, but they're all, you know, look what a hilarious way this is to die. Like one of them, there's a prostitute dancing under a disco ball and he shoots the disco ball and it falls on her head and kills her. And then he goes around and kills another couple prostitutes and the text comes up, you've blown your cover. And then basically everyone draws guns and shoots you down. I mean, it's just completely not what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, you're going to have people who do play the game like that simply because, yes, sometimes it's hilarious to put yourself in situations that you basically can't get out of. But, like I said, just because you can do something doesn't mean that's what the developers had in mind when they made the game. That's the thing. It's such a fallacy that I don't even think we have a name for it. All these people are just horrible, and they make stuff up, and again, I wish that they would either turn themselves around or go under. I don't care which.
There were charts that were released for a while, the websites like Kotaku, Gamasutra, etc., that show that their traffic since Gamergate has started has drastically declined.
Oh yeah, we're definitely seeing results. Other than Kotaku, yeah, the other ones have been really drastic in their decline. And again, other websites like Escapist have, you know, come around and apologized, and other developers and other stuff are coming around and stuff. I mean, of course, you still got some of them who are still trying to claim that this is a misogyny issue and not a journalism issue. But, again, this all comes down to, you know, these people pushing an agenda, and people are calling them out on it. And the more gamers rally, and the more gamers get together and say, no, this is wrong, the more they're going to continue to defend themselves. And if anything, the beauty of all of this is that gamers are now closer knit than they've ever been. And it's bringing everyone together to tell these people, no, you're not going to do this to us.
And I think it's really served to highlight an issue which it's been sort of boiling under the surface, but it really came to light. The contempt that a lot of gaming journalists, quote-unquote journalists, have for their audience.
Yeah.
And like I said before, when I was talking about the Jeff Gerstmann issue of these sites, that when they're not pushing some BS agenda, they act as de facto PR firms. What you're seeing in gaming is they're basically being replaced by Let's Plays and by just video game enthusiasts on their own putting stuff up on YouTube or their own website.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Ever since people started putting up their own reviews and stuff on YouTube, in a sense, I mean, other than their own connections to the developers, from a review standpoint, these websites are becoming obsolete. And basically, them coming out of their way to trash talk the gaming community almost comes off as just a defense mechanism. I think the biggest lesson everyone needs to learn out of this is that gaming is just that. It's about the games. And these people want to make it something more than that, and the gaming community just wants it to be about the games.
Well, and I have to wonder about things like the Fine Young Capitalists, what they did, which I think was great, but I just have to wonder, because I can't imagine the gaming industry being really any different than the programming industry. In the programming industry, as long as you can code, they don't care about anything else. You could be male, female, 15 or 60 or black, white, polka dotted, whatever. You know, and it's actually really easy to break into that if you're good, because you can just do something simple like, you know, create an Android app or something. Even if it doesn't go anywhere, it's something you can point to and say, hey, I did this. And they go, hey, you did do that. Okay, you must be pretty good. We'll hire you. So I can't really see, like, especially when you get into all these indie games, I really can't see the gaming industry being all that different.
It's really not, but for some reason, and this is even on the Fine Young Capitalists website, for some reason, women just really don't get into the development side of things, and I don't think that's really sexism, but at the same time, something like this is good because it encourages women to try and get involved.
And yeah, that's good, but, you know, I don't think the fact that they're not involved, it's not about sexism in the industry, it's about choices that are made long before you get there. If, you know, girls are just raised, you know, for whatever reason, not thinking, oh, you can't do stuff with computers, you can't program, that's for geeky boys.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem.
Yeah, that is the problem.
So, you know, ready, aim, fire. You have to shoot at the right target.
Yeah. But, hey, I still can't blame them for trying to help women make that step over into gaming.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of something else we talked about with Rachel Maddow, you know, saying about the disparity in what men and women are paid, and looking at the studies where they actually did do a good regression, looking at all of the different factors, and say once you account for all of those, the disparity goes away. So, you know, if there is sexism going on there, and I'm not saying there's not, you know, it's happening long before the job application is filled out. And so if you keep trying to attack it at that level, you know, by passing the Lilly Ledbetter law that says, oh, you have to pay them the same, you're not only aiming at the wrong target, you're actually doing the equivalent of putting electrical tape over the check engine light. So now we don't have an indicator of how well we're doing, and when we start seeing more women not only playing video games but also getting into coding and developing video games, that's a good way to check our progress on how much we're doing for girls and young women who might be showing an interest in this.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know what? I'm going to give a shout out, not a promo. There's no money for the podcast or anything. It's a free site. It's called CodeAcademy.com, C-O-D-E Academy.com. It's 100% free and a very easy way to learn programming languages such as Python, which is an incredibly easy language, as well as PHP, Ruby, JavaScript, and jQuery, and even learn HTML and CSS, and how to make your own interactive website, all for free. You can also learn about programming with APIs for YouTube, SoundCloud, and many others. It's great for both kids and adults, so if you're looking for a career change or just want to expand your horizons, check out CodeAcademy.com. All right, any final thoughts?
I'd say we definitely covered everything that really has happened with Gamergate, and honestly, if you know, of course there's going to be some gamers who are listening to this, and I'd say the best advice to do in this situation is to not support websites like Kotaku and all them. Just, you know, even IGN is a better source for news right now than anybody else, because despite what Anthony Birch says, outside of the whole getting paid to give a game a good review score, there is no other connection from IGN to anything else that's happened.
Yeah, they haven't had any kind of connection to the Gamergate scandal, surprisingly enough. And this is including the same company that had the Dorito Pope.
The what?
The Dorito Pope. Basically, one of the guys from IGN got caught, I think he was sponsored by Doritos and Mountain Dew to basically sell their stuff along with Xboxes.
And Call of Duty and Halo.
Yeah, and Call of Duty and Halo, and he basically is now known as the Dorito Pope.
Okay.
Yeah, Jeff Keighley.
Yeah, Jeff Keighley. Yeah, when he has more integrity than you, there's a problem. If anything, another lesson that gamers should learn is, when it comes to gaming, stop listening to these outside voices telling you that you are bad because of something that you have no control over. Don't listen to them. You know what you should do? Keep playing your games. Only pay attention to the people who are telling you what games are coming out, or news in the gaming industry, or giving you an actual review of the game. Don't listen to these people who claim to be journalists but are nothing more than glorified bloggers. You're the reason why gaming exists, because you play video games. Not these people who really couldn't give a crap less and just want to make a quick buck off of you while telling you why you're horrible. Don't listen to these people. Keep playing your games.
Well, that wraps up this Blamange edition of the Bogosity Podcast. Please visit the forums at Bogosity.tv, where you can read the show notes and join the discussion on these and other subjects. This podcast is free but not free to produce, so please donate via PayPal or Bitcoin at the top of the Bogosity.tv website or down the right-hand side of the podcast page, and give generously to keep this podcast going. And if you'd like to contribute to the podcast, just send a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. Put it in an audio file, and if it's good enough, it'll get played right in the podcast. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Dave Turcotte, Jonathan Lochey, and Matthew Page for joining me.
No problem.
Great time.
Yep.
Until next time, here's a quote from Charles M. Madigan. Journal Ganda. It looks like news, but it isn't. It's propaganda. There's nothing like Journal Ganda to make you feel absolutely certain you are correct, no matter what your position. Real journalism can always be identified by the way it makes normal people sometimes feel very uncomfortable about the world. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Imported License. Bogosity.
Check out the Superplex Brothers, superplexbrothers.com.
There we go.
Check us out on Facebook and Twitter.
Shameless plug.
Shill, 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 shill.